Welcome to the Bone Coach Show, dedicated to helping you understand all things related to diet, lifestyle, bone health, and how you can live and thrive with low bone density and osteoporosis. I'm your host, Kevin Ellis, certified health coach, health and wellness speaker, and above all else, your bone coach. After being diagnosed with osteoporosis in my early 30s, I transformed my health through diet and lifestyle and now help my clients and community members do the same through my online coaching practice, BoneCoach.com. Look, there are no quick and easy cures for low bone density, but the choices we make every single day can have a powerful impact on our bones, our health, and our general well-being. I'll share the research, interview the experts, and help you figure out how to get the conditions right in your body so you can better your bones through diet and lifestyle. A short disclaimer, I'm not a medical doctor, and this show should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions and changes to your diet and lifestyle. With that being said, let's get on to the show. Welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Podcast. Kevin Ellis here. In this episode, I'll be interviewing Dr. William Pollack, one of the world's leading experts in pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. That's PEMF therapy. But before we get into today's episode on PEMF therapy and osteoporosis, I want to encourage you, if you haven't done so already, to head over to BoneCoach.com and sign up for the free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. This is 7 emails that basically walk you through the foundational pieces for getting started on your bone health journey. In each of those 7 emails, you'll learn something new. Day 1, I'll share the single underlying theme I found in each of my private clients most successful on their bone health journeys. Day 2, you'll learn 6 helpful tips for anyone struggling with osteoporosis, whether you're newly diagnosed or you've had low bone density for a long time. Day 3, you'll get a really great overview of the different types of osteoporosis medications. I know this can be confusing for people. It was confusing for me when I first started out. And I also talk about the risks, side effects, considerations, and why I chose to forego them. Day 4, I'll give you a super simple overview of how our bones work and why you need to know this. Day 5, I'll talk about the different osteoporosis causes, which are important to rule out, and some of the tests to help rule them out. Day 6, you'll learn how to identify if you're actively losing bone, because if you are, you need to know, and you need to find out why. In day 7, I'll teach you 3 simple steps for overcoming your health challenges, and I'll teach you how not to fail when setting goals to better your bones. This is incredibly valuable information that took me weeks and months to put together. The best part is, though, it's absolutely free, and you'll have this information in your inbox to reference at any time, including at the doctor's office. So if you're newly diagnosed, or if you've had low bone density for a long time and the conditions still aren't right in your body for optimal bone health, pause this podcast episode, head over to BoneCoach.com, and sign up for the free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. You'll be glad you did. Now, back to this episode and pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. Nothing happens in the body without an electromagnetic exchange between cells. Electromagnetic energy controls our chemistry. In short, pulsed electromagnetic field therapy is the use of an external magnetic field on the body as a means for improving cellular function, increasing circulation, enhancing muscle function, decreasing inflammation, improving tissue healing, oxygenating the blood, and even bone healing. By the end of this episode, you'll understand what PEMF is, the difference between EMFs and PEMFs, the benefits of PEMF therapy on our bodies and our bones, what the research says about PEMF and osteoporosis, and we'll even talk about specific devices, intensities, times of use, and so much more. All of this will be shared by today's guest, Dr. William Pollack. Dr. Pollack is a board-certified physician and a practicing holistic MD near Baltimore, Maryland. He's considered the foremost authority on pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in North America, especially as it relates to holistic pain management, healing, and regeneration. He's the author of the most comprehensive book on healing with PEMFs called Power Tools for Health. He's also written chapters in scientific books and many articles. He's the owner of DrPollock.com, the host of the Pain Solution Summit, and he recently received the ACIM Lifetime Achievement Award in 2019 for his 30 years of work with magnetic field therapy. For this episode, you can find all of the resources mentioned, show notes, studies referenced, and more information about Dr. Pollock over at bonecoach.com/PEMF. With that being said, let's get on with the interview. Dr. Pollock, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for inviting me to talk to your tribe, your audience. I appreciate the opportunity to dispel a bunch of myths and provide people with some good information about another solution for their problems.
Well, good. So for those who are not familiar, can you explain what is PEMF?
Sure. The term stands for pulsed electromagnetic fields. So there are different kinds of magnetic fields. You have the magnetic fields from the magnets that you put on a fridge. They hold paper up on top on a fridge. Schedules and whatever. Those are what are called static magnets. They're static. They don't move. Once the magnetic field is generated, it's there permanently. Another term for them is permanent magnets. Now, if you take a magnetic field and you start to move it, either in intensity and frequency, moving back and forth and so on, that's called a dynamic field or time-varying magnetic field. So a static field is not time-varying. Pulsed electromagnetic fields are varying, time-varying magnetic fields. So basically, the magnetic field is pulsing. So both are EMFs, electromagnetic fields, although the static magnets are really not electromagnetic per se because they're not powered by electricity, essentially, some form of electricity. So essentially, pulsed electromagnetic fields are pulsed by virtue of the fact that you're driving electricity primarily through a wire. So whenever you have electricity conducted in a wire, it produces a magnetic field, and that's called the right-hand rule. So the current is flowing in this direction, and the magnetic field is going in this direction. It's perpendicular to the flow of the electrical field or the electricity. That magnetic field then can be huge, depending on the amount of charge flowing in that wire. So that's an electromagnetic field. Now, it could be a DC field, in other words, DC current, which means it could be only in one frequency, or it could be in multiple frequencies, and it could be turned on and off. It could be made stronger and weaker and stronger, what we call modulated. So there's many ways of conforming or developing a magnetic field. But essentially, it's a pulsing field. The advantage of a pulsing field in a wire that's conducting electricity is that you can shield the wire, and then the body does not have to be exposed to the electrical field, which can be electrocuting or overstimulating from an electrical perspective. In other words, it could burn tissue. The advantage of a magnetic field is that even though you shield the wire, the magnetic field is still going through the shield. That happens to be a metal shield. But if it's going through the shield, and the magnetic field goes through the body and into the body as if the body wasn't even there. So in other words, if you have a magnetic field here and you put a body in between, the magnetic field is going to go through the body all the way through. If you remove the body and measure the field out here, again, with the body there or without the body there, the magnetic field is the same. So it doesn't matter whether it's a shirt, doesn't matter whether it's skin, muscle, bone, brain, fat, it makes no difference to a magnetic field. It goes right on through. That's why they're such amazing technologies, because they're completely safe. They're not toxic. They don't burn. They don't hurt. You barely can feel them. Most of the time, in fact, the kinds of fields that we're probably going to be talking about, most of the time you can't feel it. It's doing anything. You know, it's working. As the field passes through the body, as the magnetic field passes through the body, it creates all sorts of changes in the tissues. And that change in the tissue is related to the development of charge in the tissue. So now the body, the cells of the body, we say that the body is, 75% water? Well, it's not water. It's electrolyte soup. And because it's electrolyte soup, that means that it has ions, and it has charge. And one of the principles of physics is when you move a magnetic field through charge, you begin to stimulate the charge. So our goal then with magnetic field therapy is to increase the charge production in the tissue, which then activates all sorts of biochemical cellular tissue changes in the body, which produce the effects that we're looking for, whatever those effects might be, including healing tissue, including increasing ATP in tissue. So ATP is the energy molecule of the cell. So if you increase the amount of ATP in the cell, what does the cell do? So it's a squirrel running faster in the cage. It's you lifting more, being able to lift more weight, because your muscles can work longer, work harder, recover faster. So those are all the basic effects of what a PEMF is and why we are interested in doing work, in other words, therapy, healing work with PEMFs. They do a better job than static fields. So in a static field, you're relying on the motion of electrons and other molecules in the body. So therefore, it's basically one directional. With pulse magnetic fields, the magnetic field is moving in and out of the body, and it's varying in intensity and time and so on. So it's much more dynamic. So you can use a lot less energy, and it's much more dynamic. And one of the principles that we're going to discuss is the whole idea of the inverse square law or the inverse cube law, which means that a magnetic field drops off in intensity very rapidly as you move away from the source of the stimulus. Same thing applies to light. Same thing applies to heat and cold and sound and lasers and, you know, all of those electromagnetic spectra phenomena all have that inverse square law applying to them. And that's very important when it comes to determining which type of magnetic field is going to work for the goals that we're aiming it for.
Now, I know something that people are thinking right now is a lot of people are familiar with the negative effects of certain magnetic fields. They may even think all magnetic fields are bad for us. Can you explain why there might be confusion here and where the majority of the risk lies when it comes to certain magnetic fields?
Sure. And I think that's a key distinction. We can get that out of the way really quickly. There are EMFs, which are, in a sense, electromagnetic fields. But I consider EMFs to stand for environmental magnetic fields. And then there are PEMFs, which are pulse magnetic fields, and basically they're designed for therapeutic purposes. They're not designed for communication, cellular communication, or for routers, or heating, for that matter. So a microwave oven is producing microwaves, which is electromagnetic fields. But those microwaves are high intensity, and they're absorbed by the tissue to heat whatever we're putting in the microwave. So PEMFs are not designed to heat. PEMFs are below a heating threshold, fundamentally, which makes them extraordinarily safe. So environmental magnetic fields are absorbed by the body. If you have a cell phone to your head, let's say you put a cell phone that's not working up against the ear, and you hold it there for a few minutes. Will your ear turn red? Probably not. Turn on the cell phone and hold it to your ear with communication going on in the cell phone, music playing or a signal talking, etc. You take it away from the ear and the ear will be red. So why does the ear turn red? With it on versus with it being turned off, like an airplane mode. The difference is the microwaves being emitted by the phone. And the fact that the microwaves are coming from the environment, being consolidated and condensed in this receiver, if you will, that's the phone, and then retransmitted in the phone so that you can hear it or watch something, etc. And those microwaves then become absorbed in the tissues. They're extremely tiny frequencies. And because they're so tiny and because of the intensity, they tend to be absorbed very rapidly in that tissue, therefore causing heating. PEMFs are extremely long waveforms. So a cell phone signal, a Wi-Fi signal, is in the gigahertz range, typically. So that's billions of hertz. Frequencies that are 100 megahertz, so 100,000 hertz, are very long wavelengths. So a 100 megahertz frequency wave is 3 meters long, as opposed to a microwave frequency wave, which is going to be basically millimeters, micrometers long. Huge difference. The longer the waveform, the less absorption there is in the body. Therefore, the field passes completely through the body. In fact, theoretically, it goes on to infinity. even though it drops off very rapidly, it essentially effectively goes to infinity. But they don't heat. So because they don't heat, there's no risk. That's the difference.
I think that's a really important difference. And so basically, there are EMFs that are bad, but PEMFs are good, especially in the sense that we're talking about them today too.
Correct, for healing purposes.
So what happens to our cells when they're exposed to PEMFs, and what benefits can come from exposure of our cells to PEMFs?
The list is very long. I have a book, Power Tools for Health, where a lot of the different actions of magnetic fields are described in the book, and there are about 25 of them, and I think we don't have time to go through all the different mechanisms. But the most important mechanisms are increases in circulation, reductions of inflammation, reduction of swelling in the tissues, decreasing pain, and the stimulation of healing processes. Regenerative processes. It stimulates RNA and DNA. It stimulates mitochondria, which are the cell, the ATP-producing cells in structures within the cells of the body. All the cells in the body have mitochondria. We need those because that's the energy of the cell. The cell can't work without having energy, and the ATP produce energy. And PEMFs stimulate the production of ATP. So all plus magnetic fields stimulate stem cells. So stem cell stimulation is critical for regeneration. Now, you can't grow a garden in a swamp. You have to clear the swamp. You have to make the environment for stem cells to grow into, for healing to happen, for new tissue to regenerate. You have to clear the environment to make it a healthy, vibrant environment for regeneration to happen in. And basically, PEMFs do that. So I'll give you an example. My wife broke her little toe. So the toe was out like this. So as a medical doctor, having worked in ERs and done primary care for 50 years now, that is what a clear sign of what? A broken toe. So the standard medical approach for this is you buddy tape the toes. You put bandage on the toe, buddy tape it to the next toe, the next healthy toe, or you can triple it up, etc. But you buddy tape the toes, and then you put somebody in a flat shoe, a platform shoe. Piece of wood basically with a strap around it that you can walk in, but that keeps your foot flat so you don't bend that toe, because if you bend the toe, you bend the fracture, right? You don't want to bend the toe. You got to keep it flat because it won't heal. If you keep bending it, it won't heal. So what we did is we started her on a portable magnetic system. She wore 24/7, and right after the fracture happened, bruising, swelling, pain, you know, yada yada, typical things. Put in a platform shoe, magnetic therapy for 24 hours. Next morning, she woke up, no swelling, no bruising, no pain. Okay, hallelujah. She continued the platform shoe for another 24 hours, 24 more hours of stimulation, and she walked a mile in tennis shoes. So tennis shoes will bend, flex, right? She continued the treatment for another 24 hours with the magnetic field. The following morning, she walked in 3 miles in tennis shoes, and that was it. She stopped the shoes, and she's fine. Now, I don't know whether she actually, because we didn't x-ray it, she didn't allow me to x-ray it, so she could have had a dislocation, she could have had a small little fracture dislocation. It's a possibility, but that's clearly a sign of at least a significant dislocation. But it's fine. She's fine. That's what magnetic fields can do. So that's an example of taking down the swelling, taking down the bruising, starting the healing process of the tissues, removing the pain, allowing you to function.
That's a great example. And specifically as it relates to bones and bone health and osteoporosis, low bone density, what can PEMF do? Why would somebody with osteoporosis want to look to PEMF therapy as to find benefit for them?
So I realized this a long time ago. I've been working with magnetic fields now for about 30 years. And after 25 years of working with magnetic fields, I was encouraged by tons of people to say, you got to write a book, because there's nobody else who's as good an authority on this subject as you are. And even though I had a website that had tons of information on it, it's not a book. So finally, we went ahead and did the book. But early in the process of working with magnetic fields and understanding how they work, I knew that the federal government, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, had approved devices, PEMF devices, to heal fractures. All right, so fractures that would not heal, that those are called delayed unions or non-unions. If you break a forearm, have a forearm fracture that doesn't heal, what happens? You eventually end up with a floppy bone. So you have a non-functional bone, essentially. It's a disaster, you know, functionally speaking, medically speaking. So they approved a particular device. You slap a coil onto that area of the non-union, and you run it 12 hours a day. And in a year, it's healed. You can do rods. You can do other kinds of surgical therapies. You could do bone grafting, et cetera, to try to heal. But they're a mess, and they are rarely work. They don't work very well at all. So all of a sudden comes along a non-invasive, non-toxic treatment that stimulates bone formation and has been shown to be absolutely effective. So in a year, you've got a union. So, aha. Well, if it causes a fracture that has stopped and totally stalled healing to happen, what is it doing to the bone? It's doing a bunch of things. First of all, it's helping the tissues around that old fracture to heal themselves. Number two, it's improving circulation, activating and stimulating all kinds of growth factors, including stem cells. And then it's stimulating new bone formation. Right? Now, in order to make new bone, what do you have to do? You have to have a balance between osteoclastic activity, which is bone breaking down activity, and osteoblastic activity, which is bone building. So when people get osteoporosis, what's happened with them is that they have too much osteoclastic activity and not enough osteoblastic activity. So they have complete imbalance. And the medications that are provided to people basically decrease the osteoclastic activity, but they do nothing for the osteoblastic activity. And for that, you basically cross your fingers and hope that the body can do a good enough job to stimulate enough osteoblasts. Well, in fractures, you have the same issue. You have to break down the old bone. It's like remodeling a house. You have to break down the old part of the house, and then you have to put a new structural material into the place of the old material and build bridges between the ends of the bones that are broken. So we clearly had evidence. 25 years of track record with that kind of technology, it works really well. Well, if it does that in a fracture site, what can it do in a bone that's become weakened by virtue of testing, like DEXA scanning, other kinds of imaging studies, etc.? Well, clearly you should be able to stimulate bone formation. As it turns out, PEMFs actually are the miracle. They decrease osteoclastic activity and they increase osteoblastic activity, which is actually what we want. We want to have a balance, because you or I, if we break a bone, we want that balance. We rely on our body to control the two factors. You shut down osteoclastic activity when you need to, and you amplify the osteoblastic activity when you need to. And when they're back in balance, you know, then they're constantly modulating themselves depending on the stresses that you put on that bone. So that's essentially how they work for osteoporosis. They balance the two arms. Now, PEMFs also, by virtue of increasing osteoblasts, they not only do that, but they increase growth factors. They change gene expression. They remineralize the tissues. So in other words, you make new bone, but you can have new bone that could be like a young branch. It's very soft. So you have to mineralize that bone in order to become firm again, so that then you can rely on it taking the stress that you need to put a bone through, using muscles, weight bearing, jumping, walking, you know, etc.
In some of the studies that have been done on the effects of PEMF therapy on bone, are those studies done in people or are they done in rats and labs? And can they be compared, you know, to everyday treatment opportunities for individuals like you and I who would want to get something like this for osteoporosis?
Well, there are several types of approaches. So there are what are called in vitro studies. In vitro, which means it's outside the body. So they're done in test tubes or petri dishes, and that's where you can see whether you can stimulate growth factors and you can watch mineralization techniques, etc. So you need to do in vitro to establish basic mechanisms, basic cellular mechanisms that apply to all cells. And obviously different kinds of cells will have different degrees of mechanisms. A brain cell is going to operate a lot differently than a bone cell. So that's one level of study. There are lots and lots and lots of studies now on PEMFs and bone in vitro. The next step is to study it in vivo, inside a body. And the bodies that have been studied the most have been animal bodies, mice, rats, and other kinds of animals, cats, dogs. So, and there's a fair bit of research with that. So that's the kind of proceeding process that you go through to finally reach FDA approval, because they want to see what happens in animals. They want to see that it's safe in animals. They want to see that it works in animals. So now, ethically speaking, we can subject humans to this treatment to see if it happens in humans. We want to make sure that it's safe, and we'll make sure that it's effective. So there are fewer human studies, but there are human studies. And you can't always extrapolate from a mouse study or a rat study to a human, because their physiology is different. And they're going to react in different ways. But there have been plenty of studies in animals who have been, like female rats that have had their ovaries removed, and then been exposed to PEMFs, and then they would study what happens in those rat bones that are have gone through menopause, artificial or otherwise, and see what happens in their bones. And then you expose the similar animals to magnetic fields and see what happens in their bones. You say, aha, PEMFs actually make a big difference in new bone formation and slowing down the osteoporotic process. So we know that happens in the animals. So now we know that it does happen in humans. And there aren't as many studies as I'd like to see. And many of these studies, like even the studies for the drugs, what are the longest studies that the FDA looked at to approve drugs for osteoporosis? How long, what was the longest duration? 2 years. Fosamax was originally approved for 2 years of use, because that was the length of the study. How many people who get put on these drugs are on them for longer than 2 years?
Oh, many, many.
Most, unless they can't tolerate them, which is that's a separate issue, but tolerance is a problem. Side effects are a big problem with those drugs. No such issue with PEMFs at all. My point is that you have to do these studies for a long enough period of time, and doing research studies is very expensive. And the people who are in those studies have to be willing to tolerate the rigorousness of a protocol. They can't break the protocol. You don't mess with the contract. So that's a challenge in terms of length of time. So most of the studies that have been done in humans have been relatively short term.
Now, this is a pause from my interview with Dr. Pollack, and we're going to come back to the interview in just a minute. But after the interview was over, I came across another research study, one that we didn't discuss in the interview, on pulsed electromagnetic fields on postmenopausal osteoporosis. This was in southwest China. It was a randomized, active controlled trial that was conducted to examine the effect of PEMFs on women with postmenopausal osteoporosis. There were 44 participants randomly assigned to receive either alendronate, which is Fosamax, or one course of PEMF treatment over a period of 24 weeks. The researchers were looking at the mean percentage change in bone mineral density of the lumbar spine and the left proximal femur bone. The device that was used was an 8 Hz PEMF device with an asymmetrical PEMF pulse at 3.8 millitesla or 38 Gauss. The women in this study had 30 treatments, 6 treatments a week for 5 weeks for 40 minutes each. It was a tube-type device that only treated the spine and hip areas. The bone density assessments were done at the end of treatment, at 12 weeks, and at 24 weeks. One of the conclusions of the study was that results suggested that a course of PEMF treatment with specific parameters was as effective as alendronate in treating postmenopausal osteoporosis within 24 weeks. Sounds pretty amazing, right? PEMFs as effective as alendronate in treating osteoporosis. But what Dr. Pollack shared, and what you need to keep in mind when you see this research, is that 24 weeks is not long enough to see statistically significant changes in bone density. Even though they did see benefits, he believes this study was underpowered from a PEMF perspective. So I thought it was important to add this information into the discussion because it may be a study that you come across in your own research. I'll be linking to this study in the show notes over at bonecoach.com/PEMF. Now we'll get back to the interview with Dr. Pollack.
And that, for that reason, we are going to have to basically do research of people who are using PEMFs themselves over long periods of time and then do repeated measures of their bone density. So clinically, I have actually seen numerous patients now that we followed for up to 4 to 6 years with standard therapies for osteoporosis, combined with nutrient support, supplements, hormones, and the magnetic fields. And in virtually all of them, you have seen stabilization of the osteoporosis process. I consider that a win.
I do want to ask and make clear to the people listening is that PEMF is not a standalone therapy for osteoporosis. There are other factors that need to play in. PEMF is a complement to the other things that you're doing, the nutrients,
yes,
getting your hormones correct, some of the other things in your body.
It may be able to be used as a sole therapy, but personally, as a doctor, as a medical doctor, I would never do that. That's unethical.
Sure.
Right? When I know that other things are necessary, you can't build a house without bricks and mortar. Right? You have to supply the basic nutrients for a tissue to be healthy. So if there's not enough calcium, if there aren't enough growth factors, if the body is acidic and there's a lot of inflammation in the body, the person is really unhealthy, that's how non-unions happen. Because you've got an unhealthy organism to begin with. So the delay, union or healing is delayed because you don't have the structure underneath that person to be able to do adequate healing. So yes, that's a component that has to be dealt with as well. Because whatever got you into osteoporosis in the first place, you have to understand what happened to cause that in the first place. And if you don't remove the cause, then basically you're pouring gasoline on a fire and you're trying to put the fire out by pouring water on it while you're still pouring gasoline on the fire. Well, you know, that doesn't make great sense, but that's often what we're doing.
So to help people visualize, we've talked about PEMFs, we've talked about what it does in the body. How does this actually used in practical application? Somebody gets a PEMF unit, how do they actually use this on themselves to reap the benefits?
And that's a critical question, isn't it? That's where the rubber hits the road. So we have all this understanding of how it works and why it works and that it does work, in fact. But now, how do you actually apply it? So as I said, first of all, you make sure that people are properly supported with the building blocks. And then you have to have the right magnetic system. So we know it's going to go through the bones. The studies that I mentioned, like my wife's toe fracture, that's a very local problem. That's easy. That's a no-brainer, basically. The FDA-approved devices for non-unions, that's a local problem. Is osteoporosis a local problem? It is not. It's misleading for people because they think, well, it's my spinal fracture, my compression fracture. That's where the problem is. Or it's my hip fracture. Or it's my pelvic fracture. It's not. It's the whole skeleton. What are the most common fractures in people with osteoporosis? Forearm, clavicle, right? Falls. So you don't have to be slammed with your spine in a car accident or fall down some stairs to have a vertebral fracture. In fact, if your osteoporosis is bad enough, all you have to do is have a really good cough or a sneeze. But that's extreme. So for most people, actually, it's the whole skeleton is the problem. You could have a rib fracture. I've seen many people with osteoporosis with rib fractures because they coughed. Again, that's fairly extensive osteoporosis, way down the line with T-scores of minus 3.5 or 4. So the point I'm trying to make is that you need to have a magnetic therapy system that's strong enough in intensity and covers the whole body. Now, in some cases, that's still not enough because the whole body magnetic therapy systems are not strong enough. And if you're willing to go to the bother, you can buy higher intensity PEMF systems that basically can be moved around to different parts of the body. You may not be able to get the whole skeleton, but at least you can get the biggest areas of risk. The vertebrae, the pelvis, and the femurs. So those higher intensity devices will do the job better, faster. Because the higher the intensity, the more energy is produced in the tissue, the more stimulation there is of the tissue, and you don't need to do as much treatment time. Where I see the biggest problem for people is that they are convinced by often multi-level marketing people to buy a magnetic therapy system. This works. They got testimonials. They have all kinds of evidence that it works. Well, they don't have evidence. They just have testimonials that it works. Show me the evidence. Now, if I happen to put a woman on hormone replacement with osteoporosis, that's already going to provide a benefit. But most of the time, I have not seen new bone growth. you'll see a little bit of new bone growth with Fosamax and the bisphosphonates from one year, from one test to the next, but usually not a whole lot. Can you recover all the bone you've lost? I have not seen that happen. But one of the reasons we may not have seen it happen is we haven't done enough stimulation, right kind of stimulation with it, right amount of treatment time over a long enough period of time, and people take all their supplements continually. How many hours a day does osteoporosis work? 24/7, it never sleeps. Right? So if you want to go to a doctor's office and get a treatment once a week, is that going to be adequate? There's not enough stimulus to the tissues to keep the osteoporosis at bay for the whole time. So the idea of throwing gasoline on the fire, right? If you only throw the water on the fire just once in a while and do a little bit of water, well, you know, it's not going to absolutely not going to have any impact on that fire. So you have to match the degree of osteoporosis. So some people's osteoporosis is very aggressive, and some people have it very mild. So you have to kind of know your own situation to know how aggressive you have to be and what levels of intensity you should be using. But typically, again, if people follow the protocols that I usually set out for people, then we see bone gain from one year to the next. And as I mentioned, having no further loss is still a win. But we can't tell people to expect to regain all their bone density.
What then is the appropriate treatment intensity? How is it measured? And how long does it need to be applied to receive the benefits?
So there are a couple of whole body magnetic systems, and I'll name a name. The ones that I recommend the most, because there aren't a whole lot available. The ones that I don't recommend, anybody's talking to you about a PEMF system for your bone density, for osteoporosis or osteopenia even, if you ask them what the intensity of the magnetic field is, and they can't tell you what the intensity is, run. Not too hard, but run away, because you can't rely on them to be telling you the right thing.
Sure.
So if the intensity of the magnetic system is probably less than maybe 50 Gauss or 70 Gauss, for sure you're not getting enough intensity. If you can get up to 500 Gauss, so Gauss, G-A-U-S-S, is the measure of the intensity of the magnetic field. The technical term for it is millitesla. So if it's 50 millitesla, then you get a really sufficient intensity. The problem is that a 50 millitesla magnetic field that's whole body is expensive. Now, if you don't care about cost, especially if you've had fractures already, then they're about $13,000. So don't fall off your chair. All right, but what's a fracture? What's it worth to treat a fracture? What's it worth to prevent a fracture? I know many of the people who are going to be listening to you have already had spinal fractures. And you know, it's a mess. It's a disaster because medicine, orthopedics, does not have a good solution for those. So the best thing, obviously, clearly in this case, is prevention. So that's the ideal, would be like 500 Gauss. If you want to go to a higher level intensity system, there's one that I could recommend that's about, well, there's two levels above that. One would be about 2,000 Gauss, and the next one above that would be close to 4,000 Gauss. But the ones that are above the 500 Gauss are not whole body. They're like half body. And as I said, you'd have to move it around to different parts of the body to get the benefit. But if you stick with the whole body systems, then the 500 Gauss would be the minimum, or would be the best. Below that would be about 150 Gauss for whole body. All of these systems have smaller applicators. So the one that's 150 Gauss, you can actually get an accessory that allows you to use two applicators at the same time. So if you have a whole body pad, right, the magnetic field is around inside that pad, and they're going to be stimulating the whole body in different areas. But let's say you have a problem with a pelvic fracture, or your spine is, the T-scores in your spine are worse than T-scores in your hips, then you may want to focus an additional magnetic field on the spine, the lumbar spine area. In that case, you can lay on the whole body pad to do whole body treatment, and then you could layer on top of it with a smaller applicator that's higher intensity. So for example, the 150 Gauss system has a small applicator that's about 1,000 Gauss. Okay, and the next level down below that is a 70 Gauss system that does not allow you to use two applicators at a time. And the smaller applicator with the 70 Gauss system is about 200 Gauss. So you're losing a lot of, you have a lot of loss in magnetic field. Now, all of that is still better than nothing. But I would not waste your money buying a system that's under 70 Gauss, whole body. It's a waste of money.
Okay, so basically we have a whole body mat that you're laying down on. Ideally, you would have this smaller applicator pad that's maybe, what, 12 by 12 or something
That? Yeah, essentially like a foot square.
Okay, and then you would take, you would lay down on the whole body mat, you'd turn on your device, and then you'd have this pad that's 12 by 12 or something like that, and you hold it over the area that that has the maybe the lowest bone density, so maybe that's the lowest part of your spine, and you're basically sandwiching the pulsed electromagnetic fields.
So it's called a magnetic sandwich. So this is producing a magnetic field, this is producing a magnetic field, and where the two fields combine, you have a much higher intensity in that area between those two fields. So that's, I call that the magnetic sandwich.
So how long?
You can only do that if you have a switch. You can only do that if you have a magnetic device that allows you to run two applicators simultaneously.
Sure. And so how long would you need to use either just the whole body mat or the whole body mat and this additional applicator? Is it every single day? Is it every other day? And how
long? So the research on this is all over the place. Again, largely having to do with the protocols, the costs of doing this kind of research, if people have to go somewhere to get treatment and how long do they spend in treatment, how many times a week are they willing to come to the office or to the research setting to get treatment, et cetera. Osteoporosis never sleeps. So basically, what I'm saying is you got to do it every day. The more you do it, the more bone stimulation you create, the more benefits you're going to get. Now, if you have osteoporosis, if you have T-scores that are minus 3.5 or minus 4, you do best maybe doing 3 hours a day of treatment. How much treatment do you have to do when you fracture a hip? How much treatment do you have to do when you fracture a spine or multiple levels of a spine? So you think about that, and you think that this is an inconvenience to do this treatment to prevent it, but what's more inconvenient? A fracture, clearly, right? So we have to weigh those. We all want a miracle. We want the easiest, quickest, best, fastest. And I'm sorry, you have to have the body cooperate with you. Your body's going to tell you what you can do. So what I do then is I normally start with a minimum of a half an hour twice a day. Minimum. I would, even with the higher intensity system, I would still recommend an hour twice a day. Then when you repeat your bone density, and you go on the osteoporosis protocol, when you repeat the bone density, if you've gained some bone, that's great. If you've at least stayed stable, then you know that that's what you probably have to continue. Keep doing the therapy, repeat it again. Now, if you've gained bone formation, maybe you could back off, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to be continuing to lose ground. You have to keep up with the bone loss, if nothing else. And your body's going to tell you. So if you have your osteoporosis protocol, all the supplements that you need, and you have the magnetic therapy, and you're still losing bone with all that, then we have to look at causation. Then a really much more important look at causation. If you're still on high-dose steroids, if you're still doing gluten, if you still have other autoimmune issues going on, then you have to look at those as well to be able to get control of those, to be able to have a full effect.
Sure. And hopefully if your endocrinologist or bone health specialist or whoever it is that you're going to for osteoporosis treatment, hopefully they've already done a proper workup and identified, are you actively losing bone? What's the underlying cause? And hopefully you've already addressed all those things up front.
And the more you know before you start magnetic therapy, then, you know, obviously the better off you are. I offer consultations, drpollock.com. We offer consultations for people free. No charge consultations. Now, I don't want people having consultations because my time is valuable. I'd rather be doing consultations on people who are serious and are willing to spend the money to get a system for themselves. Knowing about magnetic field therapy without application is mental gymnastics, but it's not going to help your osteoporosis.
Sure.
Now, you can use, by the way, you can use the anti-osteoporosis drugs with PEMFs. The two together will work better than either alone. You might be able to reduce the dose of your osteoporosis drugs and do magnetic therapy and get a result better. Now, the people who are really severe with their osteoporosis, and you can't really get a good hold of the bone rebuilding, then the combination of the two is especially important. So you may not be able to get enough action going with the magnetic fields. You may still have to have some benefit, some help from something else, at least for a certain amount of time. And PEMFs typically help you deal with side effects of those medications often anyway.
Great. And just to summarize what we've just kind of walked through here, you were talking about different PEMF units. The minimum amount of Gauss that you would want in any PEMF unit is 70 Gauss, correct?
Minimum.
And then ideally it would be a unit in between 150 to 500 Gauss on a whole body mat.
Correct? Whole body mat. And then it doesn't really matter what the intensity is on the smaller applicator, because you got to make sure you're having the whole body with a proper intensity.
Okay. And then you would do that every day, ideally at a minimum of 30 minutes, but could be
30 minutes twice a day.
30 minutes twice a day could be up to 3 hours. Is there a way to work this into your sleep?
No. Okay. Not with the devices we're talking about. The devices that are often available for sleep, well, if we're talking about sleep, we're talking about all through the night, and the answer is no. Most of the devices that are available that can run throughout the night are way too low intensity. They just will not do the job. One of the devices called the ParMeds Super, which is the 150 Gauss machine, the Super allows you to run it on a PC. You could write your own programs. And then that allows you to run it for 99 minutes, in which case you can put it on your bed and you have 99 minutes of stimulation at that time. That might be enough for some people. Just that 99-minute stimulation may be enough. Time would tell, of course. But that's about the longest you can get these things to work. Now, what you could do is you could turn it back on again and run it for another 99 minutes. They're not that comfortable to lay on, but you know, you can do it. It's possible, especially if you have a fracture. If you already have a spinal fracture, then or a hip fracture, and you're healing from the fracture at the time that you actually have the fracture, if you're doing magnetic field therapy, A, you're going to heal the fracture faster, and you're going to help your osteoporosis. Now, PMS, by the way, are very, very helpful for people with like myeloma or cancer who have Mets, of metastases where the bones are broken, or you've got a spinal collapse. Well, then PMS are extraordinarily helpful there, because often they're associated with a lot of pain. And one of the most effective ways of using a PMF is for cancer pain.
And does the intensity need to be increased in order to address, you know, the myeloma or the cancers or anything like that? Or is that same PEMF intensity for osteoporosis sufficient also then for the cancer and the myeloma?
It's possible. In the case of the cancer setting, I would recommend the much higher intensity magnetic systems.
Okay.
Because you not only want to address the bone itself, the area bone that's fractured or collapsed or degenerated, you also want to help with the cancer process. And PMFs can help with the cancer process too.
Great. And you're also, in addition to, if you're using this for osteoporosis, you're also getting all those other cellular benefits, correct?
Well, and that's the beauty of PEMS, right? It's not a one horse shay. It's not a one use. The FDA typically likes to have one indication for, you know, one treatment for one indication. Clinicians have to think holistically. They have to think about the whole person. So the beauty of the PMFs, again, is it can address the arthritis in your back. You can address the arthritis in your knee. You can help with headaches. There's just so many other uses. All the other uses of PMFs are available to you when you have a PEMF system. And I tell people, too, that when they own one, you don't own it. The house owns it, including the dog, the cat, and the plants. So that means other parts of the body as well as other people in the house.
Sure. Now you did mention one thing, that some of these devices may be cost prohibitive for some people. What would be, is there an economical way for people to get access to some of these devices? If maybe that $6,000, $10,000, $13,000 price point is out of their budget?
So it really depends on one's willingness to take on debt. So you can always go to a bank and borrow some money. Go to your credit union, borrow some money. Go to LendingTree.com, borrow some money, because LendingTree does support the purchase of medical devices. So the PEMFs are not considered medical devices. They're wellness devices. They happen to be adjunctive, as you said at the beginning. They happen to be complementary to other things that you do. So they're considered wellness devices. So there may be some lenders that will not, but again, we often, because it's backed by DrPollock.com or Dr. Pollock MD, then often we can get bypass that. You can also get a PayPal account and do PayPal credit. So if you do PayPal credit, then you have the ability to take 6 months to pay it off. You can either wait the full 6 months, no interest, and pay it off in one lump sum, or you can pay it off incrementally over that time. Or you can go out there and strike and find yourself some credit cards that you don't have to pay anything on it for a year or 2 years. Those are the primary ways to do it. Now, if there are people who are professionals, if they're licensed professionals, then you can get a lease. There are leasing companies that will lease to professionals, and you can then lease it out for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, you know, whatever makes sense for you.
So anything else that you think is important for our listeners to understand about PEMF and how it relates to low bone density?
Well, the only two things I would suggest is get a copy of the book. So Power Tools for Health. I have a blog on my website about osteoporosis and osteopenia. You can read the blog. So there's more information there. Obviously, you're going to certainly do your own due diligence and your own research about PEMFs, but those are the two resources that I would recommend for people to go to. And that's the most important thing, is learn more about this. And then, of course, you have access to consultations.
Great. And I'm going to link to those different resources, Dr. Pollock, that you've just mentioned here, and also link to your website and the ability for people to get in touch with you. So I do appreciate very much your time today and the information you've shared on PEMF therapy. I'm sure our listeners found it very helpful, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much again for inviting me, and I wish, you know, all your listeners and viewers great success in helping them with their problems.
Dr. Pollock, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. After the interview, part of my correspondence with Dr. Pollock included information about the PEMF therapy postmenopausal research study in China that I mentioned, but there were a few other things Dr. Pollock and I discussed, one of which is something that I think is really important to reiterate. Dr. Pollock said that there is also research that has shown that when magnetic therapy is stopped, the benefit returns to baseline because PEMF therapy does not remove the underlying cause of the osteoporosis, that is, aging and loss of hormones in the case of postmenopausal osteoporosis. This is why he recommends the highest intensity whole body PEMF systems to get the best results in the shortest daily treatment times. That's also why I would say it's incredibly important to identify if you're actively losing bone and what could be causing that bone loss, because it's not always clear. And in the free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart at bonecoach.com, I'll help you identify causes of osteoporosis, and I'll teach you how to identify if you're actively losing bone. All you do is just add your email, and I'll send the information straight to your inbox. Okay, and then my last question for Dr. Pollock was related to waveforms. If you're considering investing in a PEMF device and you're doing your own research on them, then this next part is important. There are a lot of different PEMF technologies on the market. Some of them promote their waveforms as the differentiators in their technology. My question to Dr. Pollock was, do waveforms matter? Now, his full response is a bit technical for the average listener, so I outlined the full details of his response, including an image talking about time and intensity in the post over at bonecoach.com/PEMF. But for this podcast, I'm summarizing his response to my question, do waveforms matter? Dr. Pollock says there is no one gold standard waveform, and there is no one waveform that is better than another. The purpose of the waveform is to deliver the energy into the cells and tissues. This is based on something called Faraday's law, which basically states that the change in intensity over time determines the degree of stimulation. Dr. Pollock goes on to share that some of the companies that focus on their waveforms completely ignore Faraday's law because it flies in the face of the intensities in their systems, which are under one Gauss. Even the Chinese study I previously mentioned used 38 Gauss, and Dr. Pollock's recommendation for osteoporosis is a minimum of 70 Gauss. Dr. Pollock continues on to share that the ideal change in intensity over time can be produced by almost any waveforms based on engineering design. So, companies who claim that a sawtooth wave, a square wave, or any other wave are ideal are not accurate. It all depends on the engineering. Clearly, he says, a magnetic field that only produces a maximum of 1 Gauss, even though it may be extremely rapid, for example, in a millisecond, is not going to be anywhere near as effective in the body as a PEMF device that produces a 70 Gauss peak magnetic field in that same time. So, even a very weak PEMF field with intensities around 1 Gauss can produce some benefits. However, the rule of thumb is the higher the intensity, typically, the faster and better the results will be for a shorter amount of time needed for treatment. Last thing I want to bring up related to accessing these PEMF devices, clearly this is not an inexpensive technology. It's an investment for the type of device you'd want for osteoporosis. Some of these devices can be $6,000, $7,000, even $13,000 or more for some of the higher intensities. That's a sizable investment for most people. If you have the budget for it, that's great. I know Dr. Pollock offers free consultations at drpollock.com for people that are seriously interested in the technology. I believe he even has the option to rent these for a period of time. Let's say you fracture and you want to speed fracture healing, but you don't have the budget to purchase one of these devices. Renting may be an option you consider. If that's still out of your budget, you could potentially find one at a holistic or functional medicine doctor's office near you and pay for individual appointments. I know some OsteoStrong locations have these devices, but remember, to see the kind of benefits we're talking about here as it relates to low bone density, the frequency, duration, and intensity all matter. So just keep that in mind. We've covered a lot of information on PEMF, what it is, its benefits, recommendations around devices and intensities, studies on the impact of PEMFs on our bones, and much more. Dr. Pollock said this is the most detailed interview he's done on the topic of PEMF and osteoporosis, so I hope you found this information interesting and useful. For this episode, you can find all the resources mentioned, show notes, studies referenced, and more information about Dr. Pollock over at bonecoach.com/PEMF. Remember, too, PEMF is not a standalone therapy. It's complementary. Proper nutrition and supplementation, hormones, lifestyle, and addressing underlying causes of bone loss all have a role in improving your bone health. And you know, even if you're not planning on incorporating PEMF into your bone health routine, or it doesn't fit your budget at this time, that's okay. My goal is to provide you with different information, perspectives, interviews, research that could help you in your bone health journey. It's all about education and empowerment. The more we know, the better off we'll be for making more informed decisions for our own health and our bones. If you haven't done so already, be sure to hit that button and subscribe to the Bone Coach Podcast so you never miss an episode that could help you in improving your bone health. We have some amazing bone health experts that will be joining us on the show, and I want to make sure you can learn from their expertise. I think that's it for this one. I'm your Bone Coach, Kevin Ellis. See you in the next episode.